everybody. This is Mike Rosso. This is the Alternative Cinema Podcast for January 1st, 2010.
I'm old now.
Oh, humanity. Okay. I'm here with Dwayne Pulkey.
Hello, everyone.
Who's actually now the co-host. And John, and our guest, John. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I missed one podcast and I'm dethroned.
You've been bumped.
I'm just kidding. I'm here with co-host John Fedeli.
Hey, motherfucker.
And our special guest, Dwayne Pulkey.
Hey, motherfuckers.
As you know. And I will tell everyone out there, fans, fans of alternative cinema or any of the labels that alternative cinema carries, and listeners of the podcast, that you guys are getting the fucking bum end of the stick this month.
Why?
We record podcast sessions back to back with a film photography podcast.
Come on, we're primed now.
And we just spent like an hour and a half
at least
doing a very detailed.
It's the total opposite of what this podcast really is. It's so very technical.
So all you guys want to do is curse now and tell hooker jokes.
Oh my God, hooker jokes! I got a ton of them. So. Oh, you want to hear the joke of the week?
Yes.
All right, you play with me. Knock knock.
Who's there?
Fuck.
Fuck who?
Fuck you.
All right, guys, let's reel it in.
Ooh-ha.
So we're wound up because we just a very compressed,
like a fucking slinky,
intensive podcast on film photography, and now like AC is just getting like
you can't even say heck,
which is great. We love doing that podcast.
Oh, I love them.
The film photography podcast is a G-rated podcast. Yes. There are photographers that contribute images that are in high school.
Yeah, you can't. Right. You simply cannot curse.
I mean, I think that even when we're talking about shooting models naked, we're stretching it.
Inappropriate.
Yeah, that's just true.
So here's like the flip side, you know, alternative cinema podcast. Not that anything's filthy about it, but well,
we can be free, man. We can let our flag fly.
We carry, Carter Stevens Collegiate's collection that has Harry Reams, you know. Well, welcome, everyone. This is the Alternative Cinema Podcast. And I wanted to say something sincerely without you guys maybe making fun of me, but you can't. Well, anyhow. I do this podcast, and I'll tell you why I do this podcast with these fine fellows.
Why?
I do it because of you, the listener.
You're the listener.
It's all about, it really is all about the theme. I think the theme of the year is going to be, you know, sort of grassroots and micro-budget cinema and filmmakers and the, you know, the filmmakers that are striving to sort of hone their craft,
right,
make movies, and get them distributed so other people see them. And I take for granted sometimes the fact that I'm here at Alternative Cinema and all the labels under it, Shockorama Cinema and Seduction Cinema, After Hours Cinema. And I've been doing this for about 15 years, 15 plus years, and I can't take for granted the fact that I'm grateful for fans out there who watch these films and Kinky Kong.
Kinky Kong!
Oh, God.
And
Dwayne's Finest Hour.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, if anyone has not seen Kinky Kong, check it out.
I loved being in that film.
Yeah.
A friend of mine did not.
Oh, which friend? Oh, okay. Sabrina Fair.
Yeah, she didn't like it, and I got to hear about it.
Why? I heard about it via email.
Why? Because she had a...
So the lovely Sabrina Fair, which she was a lot of fun to work with.
She was great.
Yeah, we love Sabrina Fair. She's in Kinky Kong. But I guess models and actresses who are in softcore movies, maybe when they're done shooting it...
Wish they hadn't been in it.
Yes, or 6 months later when they decide they want to, like, I'm just using this as a crazy example, but decide, you know what, I want to teach second grade kids.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden that movie, that little movie, you know, when we're a small studio, and I think actresses, like Julian Wells as well, would make our movies and never think anyone would ever see them.
Right, that's
ludicrous. It was almost like wink, wink, hey, yeah, I went to these guys, I spent like 8 hours on a set, they paid me this money to do this movie, I really...
Yeah, but now it's like a tattoo, it just will not go away.
Take your top off, honey, no one's going to see it.
That's a great analogy, John. Yeah. It's like a tattoo. So Sabrina Fair, about 2 years ago, sent me an email when Kinky Kong was in heavy rotation on HBO, and... You can't really read how emails, like, if they're serious, if she mean it, is she joking? Her email was just like, Make it stop.
Do you know why she did that happened?
Because she's like, this, can you make it stop?
She. This is a true story because she's actually a very good friend of mine. And,
okay.
Which is and she was dating a new guy.
Yes.
And they were at the point in their relationship when they were going to become amorous, and she went into the bathroom, to get prepped.
Stop.
And he's in the bedroom with the TV on.
Get the
and
fuck.
Hits Kinky Kong.
No, stop it.
I'm not making this up. So she comes out and he's like, "Is this you on television? Can you imagine? Like, what are the What is the chances that
it's
happening?
Like getting hit by lightning.
Yes, that happened. Yeah. And she called me on the phone. And said, you're not going to believe what just happened. So I think that was.
So what? He's left.
I don't know. I don't know if he left. If
I would have banged her so hard.
Wouldn't that have been like, oh my God, I'm going to watch you on TV while I'm having sex with you? That would have been my whole thing.
Right.
I don't know what happened.
Well, he wasn't worth it, Sabrina. F him.
But we make
or don't.
We make small movies here, micro budget. I've got some letters here that people send. We have a great mailbag. We have a great mailbag section today of people sent letters in, and a lot of independent. And a lot of micro-budget filmmakers, guys and girls just starting up, I think they want to know, like, well, how do you do this? How do you get yourself distributed? And what is it all about? Like, it's a mystery. I mean, we're just beat because we're 15 years in.
Yeah.
We've been beat down by the system. And a lot of times I complain on the podcast, but I like to complain in a way that's
proactive.
Productive and encouraging. Because if you're a movie maker or you love these small little films – as a fan, you're depending on filmmakers to continue to make these little films because you love them so much.
Right.
And as a filmmaker, you want to know, well, how can I do that? So even though things are not the best right now for indie filmmakers because of the death of DVD and all the stuff I've talked about in previous podcasts, I like to barrel forward. Is that our expression?
And welcome Mickey Rooney.
Hello, everybody. Oh, I played Santa Claus.
And I wanted to say this to everyone. If anyone that watches the ball drop, Dick Clark, Happy 2 Year!
That's so cruel, but really funny.
Yes.
Does he talk like that now?
Happy 2 Year.
Dick Clark had a stroke in 2004, and he was off 1 year, and Regis Philbin filled in. Then
really?
Then he came back, and he was rehabilitating himself to talk.
Stroke out.
And, I'm not making fun of him to laugh, but I'm just mimicking the, he's like, I want to welcome everyone here, rocking New Year. Okay, 10, 9,
6, 4, 11, Happy 2 Year.
So I Googled it, the Google. And there are numerous articles published about the fact that.
Maybe he shouldn't be doing this anymore.
Yes. But maybe. He feels that he's so tied in with the ball drop because previously to Dick Clark, it was Guy Lombardo, for anyone that remembers that. Yes.
And he passed the torch? Lombardo passed the torch right to Dick Clark.
Either that or the slot opened up and Dick Clark Productions bought the slot. Who knows?
Guy Lombardo used to watch his own ball drop.
But now it's called Dick Clark's Rockin'.
Funniest thing I ever heard.
Dick, that's good.
None of your Guy Lombardo.
Now it's Dick Clark's Rocking New Year's Eve with Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, that jackal.
And Ryan Seacrest is freezing his ass off outside.
Good.
And
F
Dick
him.
Clark is in a nice cozy studio. No, wait a minute. Why doesn't John like Ryan Seacrest? Is there anyone he likes?
Why?
I'm asking him because I'm not even going to ask John because he's just angry.
He's a phony baloney.
How is he a phony baloney?
Like,
who
like
is he?
That other jackoff, Carson Daly. They're both jackals.
You guys.
You ever see Carson Daly's Last Call? He has no comedic
the
ability
show
whatsoever.
Is the worst fucking thing I've ever seen on
He
TV.
Should not be.
It really is the worst thing. And Ryan Seacrest is just everywhere, and he thinks he's a talk show host. He thinks he's a TV producer.
You know what?
He thinks he's a celebrity.
You know what? I think you get a talk show for one of two things. Other, you were a comedian, and you just push to get a show, and you get a show, and you got some comedic sensibilities, or you just hang out. And that LA environment, you get to know people, and you schmooze a lot, and you finally get a program. And a guy like Ryan Seacrest is one of those guys. And
yeah.
He never spent 5 minutes in a fucking comedy club trying to make a crowd laugh.
You don't know that.
I don't know.
I don't think he did.
Listen,
I might be wrong. I might be full of shit. I don't think that he did.
This could segue into our next thing, which is if someone knows about Ryan Seacrest, if he did any stand up, we now have an email address.
Oh, really?
Alternative Cinema.
Alternative.
Back Seacrest. Back.
Do you?
Back Frosted Tips.
Alt.
Dot org.
alternativecinemapodcast@gmail.com.
No, that sounds very.
Now you don't have to. Your mail doesn't have to filter through the alternative cinema catalog division. Doesn't have to be forwarded to anybody. Nice. It just comes right to us.
Nice.
So now, if you want to talk about anybody else here, you know, you can just send it directly to me, and I'll just pass it along.
Ryan Seacrest had a cameo in the movie Knocked Up, and he was actually really funny in it.
Okay. See,
he was actually.
Hey, I'm not saying the guy can't be funny.
Listen, Ryan Seacrest, if you or any of your family listen to the Alternative Cinema Podcast, you're a good guy. Thank you.
Well, the opinions of John Fedeli are not necessarily those of the other two jerk-offs on this show.
Today on the show, we have our mailbag segment.
It's worth a lot of money.
We have earlier today. Because we're on a very tight schedule, I pre-recorded an interview with Richard Griffin, director, and Ted Marr, producer. They're with Scorpio Film Releasing. They're in Rhode Island. They've made a number of films, and they're behind the January 12th Camp Motion Pictures release. None of that. But, we're looking forward to an exciting year of alternative cinema. I want to hear from filmmakers. I hope that we are entertaining enough that you will continue to subscribe to our podcast. And let's get to our mailbag.
Mail!
Because John wants to get out of here.
It's not that I want to. It's just that I have to. I'm sorry.
We used up all the time for the Film Photography Podcast.
That's right.
All right.
Mail's in.
We got a lot of letters this month.
Yeah.
And?
Why don't you read this?
John?
No, John's not reading anything.
I can't. Dude, I can barely talk.
I'll read it. I like reading letters.
I'm a little sleep deprived.
The name is Keith Fox. Hi, Michael. I just wanted to write to say what a surprise it was to hear you talk about Scott Walker.
Yes!
Wow.
I find his earlier albums, 1, 2, 3, and 4, more listenable, but his later work is interesting but very difficult. I read an article/interview with him in British music magazine Wire, and he comes across as a normal and well-adjusted guy. It was a relief to learn this is because the image of a tortured soul making the music he made in the last 15 years wouldn't have been such a bummer.
She stands all alone. You can hear her hum softly.
Apparently, he and his engineer used raw sides of beef as a percussion instrument somewhere on the album The Drift.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like this show. I'm more of a film photography podcast fan, but I find filmmaking interesting, and it's fun to listen to you and the crew. Dwayne or John, Joe, whoever did the Scott Walker impression was spot on.
Joe.
Keep up the good work.
Really?
Keith.
Yeah.
Does a Scott Walker?
Oh. No, Joe did it spot on.
I can't do it.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
really I never was. Heard of Scott Walker in my life.
I
dreamed about
Bowie
them.
Crossed with what?
Anthony Newley.
No. I was going to say Brian Ferry crossed with David Bowie.
Ah, very good.
And the revolving door, and she knows the score because she's just my little whore.
We could take
on antidepressants.
We could take Joe into Dane's studio, do some instrumentation, and we could cut our own tribute to Scott Walker.
We should do that.
We just write some insane lyrics.
Yeah, something that has no meaning.
Yeah.
Full of non sequiturs.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the letter, Keith.
Yeah, cool. It's great to
know. Are Scott Walker's albums actually released? I mean,
yeah, they're on Amazon.
Labels,
cult.
You can
figure.
Download them.
Have you seen the documentary yet?
Oh yeah, I saw it.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I saw it right after you told me about him.
It was fascinating, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's a total normal guy. You look at him; he just looks like any guy.
Comes in, he's got his cap on. Hey guys, what's up?
What's his biggest claim to fame?
The Walker Brothers.
Yes.
They had big hits in the 60s or 70s in England.
66.
They were very big.
They were on the charts with the Beatles.
In England, not in America.
Yeah, the Walker Brothers. They were huge in England.
For how long? Like 4 or 5 years?
Yes. three, four years. Then Scott did solo. Scott 1, Scott 2, Scott 3, Scott 4.
Then he regrouped.
Released Big Bundle of Scott.
Yes. Then he regrouped with the Walker Brothers.
Mm-hmm. For an album.
An album with Guy Lombardo.
Night Flight.
Scott Walker watching your ball drop. Almost, but not quite. I'm getting there.
Night Flights. That is a... You saw Brian Eno and David Bowie talking about there. How Night Flights, 1977, landmark album.
By the Walker Brothers?
Yes, but the Walker Brothers was like three sections. Each brother took their own section and did like mini solo albums.
Which one was a Texas Ranger?
Chuck Norris.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you know, this I have anyway. For anybody who listens to the podcast and is so like tired of hearing me talk about Scott Walker, this letter gave me another opportunity
to talk about Scott Walker.
And I will tell you this, his two toughest albums, The Drift, 2006, and Tilt, 1995, they're the kind of albums you give them three, four listens, then all of a sudden like something opens up for you.
It's definitely an acquired taste, but you got to push through, man.
Yeah. What opened up for you, Mike? I mean, is it something emotional or just...
No, you get it, kind of.
Yeah, the music...
Because it's like abstract art.
Yep.
That you look at and you're like, what the fuck is that? And then, you know, you come back to it a second time and you're like, oh, wait a minute. And then the third time you come back, you got to take resting periods in between listens.
And heavy drugs.
Yeah, well, that too. Oh, I hit the mic. How unprofessional.
Babs. They need a good...
Jimmy, are you okay?
Well, Mom, I'm looking at all these horror sites, but I want one that kills!
Killer Reviews is the place to be for horror, science fiction, and fantasy. Oh. Killer Reviews.
I'll be right back!
Horror Reviews, interviews, a killer podcast in a form for freaks like Killer Reviews.
So there you have it, Jimmy. KillReviews.com has everything you need. Jimmy? Jimmy? Jimmy!
Hi, hello. My name is Ken.
And my name is Seth. We're the hosts of the Movies About Girls podcast.
We'd like you to listen to our show, because on our 50th episode...
We're going
to
kill a guy.
Until then, we're going to watch hardcore pornography...
And laugh at jerks.
So if you like tits and murder...
And gags and bitterness...
Then listen to the Movies About Girls podcast, the podcast for teenage losers of all ages. MoviesAboutGirls.com.
The next letter is from Tony Marsiglia.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, the director.
The director. I went to Los Angeles in early November to go to a screening of Teenage Mother, which is one of our Secret Key Retro Seduction Teenage Cinema releases. Awesome. It was our November Retro Seduction Cinema release, a Teenage Mother double feature with Female Animal.
Okay.
So the New Beverly Theater and Adam Tamberg programmed it at the New Beverly. He's a projectionist at the New Beverly. I flew out very, impulsively, just bought a ticket, JetBlue.
From JFK?
Anybody with stinky feet sit next to you?
No.
They fly out of Newark yet or just JFK?
JFK.
Oh, what is that?
Sucks. Anyhow, I got on a plane very impulsively, grabbed my Canon AE-1 and some Kodachrome and went to LA and went to the screening. Mm. And I saw Tony Marsiglia for the first time in years. And it was.
Does he still have long hair?
You're thinking of Ward Bolt.
No, Tony Marsiglia had long hair.
Oh, he had like shoulder length hair.
Kind of like, yeah, like fashionable shoulder length. I would call it long.
I think he had short hair now.
Oh, he cut it.
Yeah. Okay. And it was, I would say it was like bittersweet. Seriously, we're sitting there across from each other. I mean, I love Tony. I think he's a great artist. I love his films. I produced majority of his work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when the business model changed, as I've discussed in previous podcasts, you know, it's not time now for me to produce these high budget, mm-hmm. you know, shot on film features. And everything's shifting and changing now. So I haven't produced with Tony in a while, but he's continued. He did Susie Heartless, which is now on DVD through Alternative Cinema. He produced it himself. And it was just great seeing him. Because for the few years, that was like a magical time.
May I ask you who bankrolls those films now? Does he do it himself or what?
He's bankrolling his own movies now, and there's much because technology is so good now. Mm-hmm. He's able to really shoot them himself with you know one or two other guys.
Him and David Lynch. David Lynch does the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, he shoots on video, high def video now.
Didn't
last feature.
Didn't James Cameron do Avatar with like two, three guys?
Oh yeah, same deal. He shot that on like a
they did it in a motel, I think, too. They just like, you know, put
a green screen.
They painted the walls green.
It was a Motel 6, I think, in Costa Mesa, and they just, you know.
It's like, if they can do it in Titanic 2000, we can do it.
But you recall the Tony's set, that was a big crew.
Oh, it was enormous for one of these smaller films, yeah.
I remember. Sanford and Son.
Where's the sound guy?
We talked about this last time, right?
Yeah.
All right, we won't go into it again.
But it was awesome.
The sound guys would roll in like Beverly Hillbillies, like on a van, in a truck.
It was a Sanford and Son truck. It was like that truck. I swear to God, the guy bought the Sanford and Son truck, and that was his transportation. And it was a...
He had everything audio related.
It wasn't an awesome section of like... L.A. like Beverly Hills, but it was nice enough that there were movie star houses there. And so you expect like a Ferrari to go by, and then there's...
They were great sound guys.
Oh, they were...
They were a team.
They were very good, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, these features, these features were shot in Hollywood, USA with film permits. I mean, this is like the zenith?
The heyday.
This is like the highlight. This
the
is like
pinnacle.
The seduction cinema pinnacle. With the entire class of 2002, you know, Darian Kane, Misty Monday, Ruby Julian LaRocca, Wells. Julian Wells. I mean, it's just...
Shelley Jones' sister.
Shelley Jones and Casey Jones. That was her name, Casey Jones.
That's right.
And we shot a previous film, Tony shot, Sin Sisters, which you were not on, was Misty Monday and her sister Chelsea Monday. We were actually talking about doing, I swear to God, a seduction cinema western. Just like they did with like all the, you know, the siblings with Shelley Jones, Casey Jones, Misty Monday, Chelsea Monday, John's making. If you see John's face, he just can't even believe.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A western?
We were talking about at the time.
Would it have musical numbers in it?
Probably that would be rejected.
Oh.
Sorry. Wah, 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 wah.
Would there be nudity?
No,
never.
We're talking about this back in 2003.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to do another. I mean, Tony and I have talked about various projects. Hey, let's do this. Let's do that. We're in development on Frankenstein.
Mm.
Seduction Cinema's Frankenstein.
That was after Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes, where Misty Monday was going to be more of the Michael Sarrazin monster from the 1974 movie where she's, you know, creates the most beautiful, flawless creature. But she's destroyed by the imperfections of the creator.
Sometimes
she's corrupt by society. Did I talk to you about this too, John?
No.
On Facebook, because I'm friends on Facebook with some of the girls that were in your Seduction Cinema cast,
yes.
They talk about these films in a kind of...
Derogatory?
No. Just the opposite. Kind of like a... What's the word I'm looking for? Like a sentimental kind of a way. Like it was an era that was fun to be part of.
It was a time that came and went.
Yeah. But I mean... It's a new time now. It is. I mean, we're sitting here doing a podcast and, you know, internet radio show.
Yeah, but there's no naked chicks.
The big difference, no lesbian nudity. But, I mean, you know, come on.
Other than that, it's the same.
Producing, it's exactly the same.
I'm producing Red River now.
What kind of movie is it?
It's a horror movie.
Oh.
And is it being shot around here?
No. It's being shot completely off-site by the filmmaker.
On what?
HD.
No.
It's a different world now, guys.
It's a different thing.
It's a different thing. But anyhow, Tony sends us a letter and he says, you know, he's listening to our podcast on the drive home from work. Maybe we're broadcasting on some FM station.
Yeah, maybe.
No,
maybe somebody records it and pirate broadcasts it.
Yeah, that could be it.
No, he's probably using his iPods.
His Walkman.
He says, I really appreciate your podcasts. Your warm, odd, devoted of the art personality really comes through. I really mean that. It's infectious and good and better and comes from a base of knowledge. It's so strange yet appreciated. He says, when I do get some time, I like to come on the show. And he says he misses the old days. So do I.
Everybody does.
Everybody does.
Actually, the whole world does. The world's changed so much.
It's become a much more anxiety-filled, anger-filled place where everything's expensive.
Jesus
and nobody has
Christ,
any money.
Everyone is on antidepressants.
Wow. Yeah.
John, you want antidepressants?
Three of them.
No, stop.
No, of course not. Okay. Does pot count?
No.
Okay.
All right, next letter.
You shouldn't say publicly that you do that.
Do what?
Smoke pot.
Who said that?
It's still illegal.
Who said that?
I did.
Yeah, you read this, Dwayne.
Don Lombardo.
Jane. Jane's joking. Jane? Who?
Jane?
John's joking.
Who's smoking pot here?
John doesn't smoke any pots.
No, I don't have time to smoke any pot.
Ghoul school. For any of you boys smoking pots.
Any pots.
Our next letter comes from a Mr. Cameron Pierce. And he writes, "Hey, Michael. Considering everything you've done to restore exploitation films, I thought you might be interested in my latest book, The Ass Goblins of Auschwitz."
This is a book, he says?
Yes. It just came out from Eraserhead Press. Ooh. In a lot of my work, I strive to bring the grindhouse aesthetic to fiction, and I think it's important in Ass Goblins.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Ass no, goblins. It's kind of just funny to put aesthetic and ass goblins in the same sentence.
Yeah, I guess that's it, the juxtaposition.
Is there a website?
Thanks for your time, and I hope you'll check out the book. As an independent author, I rely a lot on word of mouth to support myself, so it's incredibly helpful when people spread the information to others who might be interested. Sincerely, Cameron Pierce.
All right, we'll have to check it out.
That's what we're all about. Is there a link, or is it just a click-through? Like, is there a www?
It's a piece of paper.
Oh.
I mean, you can contact him at CameronPierce@hotmail.com if you want to ask him, but there is no website listed.
I'm sure if you Google that.
The Ass Goblins of Auschwitz has been highlighted, so if you double-click or single-click on Ass Goblins of Auschwitz, it will tell you something about Ass Goblins of Auschwitz. I just love saying that. It's so wrong.
So wrong, but so right.
I mean,
we definitely have to check that out.
It's a concentration camp in Poland, which was it was a death factory. What is an ass goblin? What is an ass goblin?
It's a goblin that likes ass, apparently.
I don't know. I don't know what an ass goblin is.
I hope it's not racist.
I hope it has nothing to do with the Nazis.
Sibbity shakes, though. I mean,
this is from a Mike Ashcraft. Ashcraft? Yeah.
Ashcroft.
Ashcraft.
Craft.
Dear Mike, just discovered your podcast, AC Podcast, and really dig it. You guys have something rare, great camaraderie, and a great humor, plus great knowledge of your genres. I'm now interested to purchase your titles and check them out. Please don't stop producing it. On recent episodes, Michael has talked about his uncertainty of the future of media distribution as it pertains to DVD. He's mentioned that he's not sure what to do, but to wait and see what the new distribution models will be. My thoughts. Continue building out AC.com as an incredible portal. Make it the source and the destination for sexploitation entertainment, knowledge, articles from those filmmakers whose titles you sell, and build out the video on demand service that you're currently sharing with VOD.com.
Yes.
Don't wait for the world to dictate to you. Do not wait.
That's right.
You filled a void and with your DVD labels, and you can do it again with an online portal.
Yes.
Somethingweird.com is putting their entire library online for $5.99 downloads. If you did that along with incredible original content of articles behind the scenes, filmmaker stories, articles by that film historian guy, dude, you could really position yourself to go forward. Two, you could cultivate a new generation of sexploitation fans. Love your podcasts and getting to know you guys. Press on, Mike!
It's very encouraging. The idea is to let alternative cinema be like a hub, like you said, a hub for entertainment where people would click on it. They'd have our video podcast. We'd have behind-the-scenes interviews.
Wants to see three tired old men gripe about the distribution loss.
No. If we did this video, we'd be cutting in clips and stuff.
Oh.
This is from Zach Snig.
Oh.
Oh, right. Let me read this one. How you doing, Zach? Dwayne.
Boom.
Boom.
Boom. Hey, Zach. Boom.
Hey, Zach. Boom.
Mike and Joe. Okay, pretty good podcast. Particularly Dwayne's wacky New York City stories. Was he drunk when he told all that stuff on the air? Drugs, sex, etc. Anywho?
No.
No, I wasn't drunk.
No, we don't drink here at the AC Podcast.
Yeah.
Was what I said so...
Maybe Zach was shocked by the fact that it was so raw in your face of just, you know, what it was like. But then again, we were talking about Story, Prunella, and all these hardcore adult films that were shot late 70s, early 80s. I mean, it was a rough time. Zach knows it. He was there.
You were there, Zach.
Yeah, what kind of exploits did you have, Zach?
What did you do back in the 80s, Mr. Snig? I've heard some stories about you.
All right, what else to say?
But you got to have more Joe and his Godfather stories. Brilliant.
Sounds like you need a little persuading.
Don't step on the oxygen, kid.
Marty, Joe's going to be living with us for a while. And instead of saying hi or anything, he looks at me. He goes,
now, if you step on that tube, you're going to kill me.
That's what he says.
And, hey, you know there's a TV upstairs?
And then this other time I came home, and he's sitting there on the couch watching the Andy Griffith Show. And I come in, I sit down next to him, and I can see him in the corner of my eye just, like, looking at me. Like he's getting pissed. And he finally goes,
you know, there's a TV upstairs.
As if to say, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, my God.
That is a must-hear podcast. Happy holidays, Zach.
I interviewed Richard and Richard Griffin and Ted Moore of Scorpio Film Releasing there in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yo, Providence, went to college there.
Did you really?
Yeah, I went to Brown University in Providence.
Do you have any wild sex stories from Providence?
No, I did not lose my virginity till after I left college. I was very, very, very...
For real?
Yeah, I was a very, very awkward, shy person. I can't believe I just said it to the world. I don't care.
Right. So what? Everybody sometimes gets laid at 30. So what? For the first time. No big deal.
Richard's poster, Feeding the Masses, is right behind you, as a matter of fact.
With Joe Colbeck on.
Joe Colbeck is the cover.
In all fairness to myself, Brown University at that time was a very, like, left-wing feminist.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, Clemson or something where, you know,
people were getting laid left and right. It worked.
Richard's first film was Feeding the Masses.
I knew John Kennedy Jr.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, went to college. That was him. He used to go swimming.
Nice guy.
Richard's first film was Feeding the Masses.
It was actually.
Yeah. He looked like a nice guy. Oh, really?
Talking about John F. Kennedy Jr. So Richard's movie, Feeding the Masses, is his first feature film. It was actually bought and distributed by Shakarama Cinema.
Shakarama!
Our very own Shakarama Cinema.
Shakarama!
And
Shakarama!
His follow-up, I think, was Creature from the Hillbilly Lagoon, originally called Seepage. Feeding the Masses was a successful film.
I saw it in Blockbuster, and it was never there. There was the little thing behind it was there.
Blockbuster, Hollywood Video. It was...
Blockbuster Video!
Yeah, it was terrific.
Creature Joe Colbeck is on the cover of that.
Joe Colbeck.
I took the picture.
Yes, that's right. It came out really well.
It's the first.
It almost looks 3D.
It's the first commercial job I ever did on a digital camera was actually that picture.
Really?
On a Minolta Damage.
And he had actual practical makeup on. Did Brett do the makeup?
Yes.
Brett Piper?
I believe so.
Feeding the Masses.
Who I saw on Facebook last night.
Get out.
He was tagged in a photo with Anjou.
But do you know if Brett is actually part of Facebook or just say Brett Piper?
I put Brett Piper into the search engine and nothing came up.
Oh. I think someone tagged him, but it doesn't link to an account.
Right.
But Anjou is on Facebook.
Yes, she is.
Yes, I'm friends with her on Facebook.
And she was talking about Seduction Cinema.
Oh, good things?
She was talking about Seduction Cinema.
Great.
Good things, bad things.
Well, she's the star of SSI.
It was not bad. Not that bad.
You've seen that film, SSI? I gave you a copy.
Yes, I did watch it with John. John's very funny in that. Very funny in that, John.
It's a good film, wasn't it, Mr. Duane? I'm not saying that because I produced it.
It was well done.
Yeah.
It was well done.
Did you laugh? John was
funny.
That's
a no.
No, I didn't laugh at it. I didn't find the jokes particularly funny, but John was funny in it.
Anjou was good in it. AJ.
You know why? Because it was the one with the British guys in it?
Yeah.
And they were trying to do American accents, and I just said, you know, you're not doing American accents.
What did you think of the British female cast?
I thought they were pretty hot.
Yeah.
Very, very hot.
Yeah. At that time.
So the girls were cute, really, really cute.
That was in 2005. At that time, like, softcore pornography, like, busted wide open in the UK. Like, the laws changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it became all overnight, practically, a industry.
Really? In 2005?
2005. And before, like, 2002 to 2005. And after that, to now hardcore has kind of broken wide open.
Really?
Like, it's a huge business now, yeah. I remember Tom J. Moose, the director, complaining. He's like, oh, I'm having a hard time casting this because all the actors want to be paid by the scene because it's...
So it's in America.
Really?
Pornography, yeah. Yeah, we're shooting this, you know, softcore, you know. That was like did you think it was like a Benny Hill kind of scenario?
I'm not a real big fan of that kind of humor, so I don't think I'm an accurate judge of whether it was funny
or
not.
Did you see the fake horse? Come on. The trolloping down the street, the guy with
the
gun.
Very Monty Python-esque.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it had that edge to it.
Yeah. That's SSI. But,
the pantomime horse is a big thing in England.
But the guys who couldn't do the American accent just annoyed me. Because they always so fucking bad at it.
They put like a southern twang to it.
In New York.
Yeah, it was the bizarrest thing, you know. But you were amazing. The dance thing? Was it?
Oh, the flash dance.
That was amazing.
That was great.
Yeah, that was amazing. You were amazing.
This is SSI, Sex Squad Investigation, available at Blockbuster fucking video.
Blockbuster fucking video. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it was good.
Was that the
overall?
Last
it was a good, really good movie.
We cut an R version, and Blockbuster wanted a hotter than they like. Could you give us to it unrated?
You got any ass fucking in it?
But they, what they really meant was,
hi, this is Jim from Blockbuster. Yeah, do you have any ass fucking in CCI?
What they really meant, they didn't really mean unrated, because our unrated is like Cinemax unrated. Uh-huh. They really meant like 40-year-old virgin unrated, which is nothing more than like an additional scene thrown in with like,
oh, I see,
a butt or a
you
tit.
See your breast,
yeah, yeah, a breast. So we did cut a intermediate version. SSI.
Do you have any of
it? Stop.
I've gotten links to it.
Oh, send me.
I don't want it. No, I didn't even
call
go.
Call me.
SSI. Anyhow, Richard, we did an interview with Richard Griffin. Let's go. Let's roll the interview. Richard Griffin. With me today is Richard Griffin and Ted Marr of Scorpio Releasing. How you doing, guys?
Great. Well,
great, great, great. And we have a January Camp Motion Pictures release of None of That. But before we talk about None of That, I wanted to ask you guys sort of the genesis of Scorpio. How did you start making feature films? As opposed to, I know, Richard, you were in commercial production before you made features. What was the transition, and how did you get started?
Well, as I said, I had worked as worked in television doing commercials and things like that for about 14 years, and I just really grew tired of doing it. And I had done a lot of short films and a couple of small features that were, kind of, I guess you'd call art films, kind of non-linear stories and things like that. And I said I really wanted to get into, doing films professionally, even just on a small level. And, I had met Ted, and we decided to start Scorpio Film Releasing. And our first picture was together. The first film that we worked on together was Feeding the Masses. And that kind of started the whole thing.
My involvement was basically Richard had me along to read for a number of, to read opposite a number of actors that we were auditioning for the lead in Feeding the Masses. My role kind of evolved as I was like, okay, well, remember you got to call this guy and the other guy and, do this and that. And he said, oh, okay. By the way, you're producing this film. And I said, no, I'm not. But he eventually convinced me.
So, Ted, you're a producer in the sense that you kind of jumped into a project and just jumping into
by
it.
By acclaim.
Yes, yes.
Or by fiat, depending on, how much you like Italian cars.
Right. So that was the first feature film, Feeding the Masses. How did you choose subject matter? Like, what made you want to get into genre filmmaking of horror as opposed to any other type of film?
Well, I've always loved horror movies, and I could never figure out why I had actually never made one. I was doing, as I said, a lot of stuff that was very kind of, I guess the word art house, and I had this idea for basically a news crew. Basically, it was the concept was if the first 10 minutes of Dawn of the Dead was a feature, all this stuff at the television station. Actually, you followed all the TV crews, and I wanted to do something, having just kind of television, I wanted to do something that kind of parodied television. And that's really where Feeding the Masses came from, and I was lucky enough to get Trent Haga to write the screenplay.
How did you meet Trent?
I actually met Trent because he might have known Scott Phillips, the director of Stink of Flesh that I was, the director of photography on. But Trent, at that time, he had just finished working for Troma, and he had the greatest website. It was just a website, and the front page said, "We'll write for food."
Nice.
And I know Trent had done a great job writing Citizen Toxie, and so I said, well, I think this guy maybe has a sense of humor and sensibility that would suit as well.
So Trent came on and wrote Feeding the Masses and did a magnificent job.
So before you shot your feature film, and I kind of want to ask you questions from the perspective of a startup filmmaker, because a lot of letters we get at Alternative Cinema are, hey, I love your podcast. I love when you're talking about starting up. And I would love to hear more about what it's like to make a movie and get it distributed. So before you made Feeding the Masses, I'm getting the feeling that you already knew what Troma was, what Fangoria magazine. I mean, were you a fan enough of the genre to know all these companies?
Well, I certainly knew Fangoria. I mean, I had been reading it since, you know, 1979 when it first came out. And I knew a lot of, you know, what we didn't know really anything about was distribution.
Right.
You know, that was the main thing. And I remember one thing Ted was really smart about was putting press releases out about the movie when it was completed, when we finished editing it. And, you know, we had put a press release in Fangoria online, and that's how we got all these responses from distributors. It was amazing. I think this was still, you know, this is 2004 when the market was still kind of bopping along. And we must have gotten 10 responses just that you know, that next day after the press release went up.
The other thing was that script that we shot first, in a lot of ways it was dictated by what we had access to, which is to say, you know, at that time, Richard had access to a television studio. So we were able to get a lot of good production value with a television studio. So Feeding the Masses came out looking a little bit, you know, more professional than it would have otherwise.
Right, right.
You know? So, you know, a lot of public buildings, you know, having deep roots in Rhode Island, you know, means that you can call in favors and, you know, beg, borrow, and steal things that you wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Right. Subsequently, have your features after Feeding the Masses been easier or more difficult to produce?
They've been easier for the most part. Each film is its own beautiful and unique snowflake, and they each come with their own set of issues. You know, they've gotten easier along the way just as, you know, as I said, you know, your roots get a little deeper, and it gets a little bit easier. You know, you know more people in the area, and you think, oh God, we need a big abandoned warehouse. Who do we know that has a big abandoned warehouse? You know,
right.
Over the past, I think, starting with Splatter Disco, kind of was the beginning of we basically met up with this group of actors, basically being headed by Sierra Nicklin. And they have kind of followed us from production to production now for the past few movies. And they have been this amazing group of people that are, you know, not only fantastic actors, but also they double as great crew people.
Right.
And they're an amazing, they followed us now up until our new film Atomic Brain Invasion. And we couldn't make these movies without them.
From a micro-budget film perspective, this is incredible. And these films are commercially available in the U.S. on DVD?
Basically, everything that's been acquired. The only one that really hasn't is just. I know we're completely discounting Dysfunctional Book Club. That's still on the film festival circuit. Pretty Dead Things is being released through our own label on January 12th.
Right.
But everything else, I think, Carol. Outside of Raving Maniacs, I think you guys are distributing almost everything else we've ever made.
Right.
And Dunwich is on our own label, too, Beyond the Dunwich Horror.
Right. So right here at Alternative Cinema, the various labels we have here, Shockorama Cinema, Camp Motion Pictures, we've released Feeding the Masses, Creature from the Hillbilly Lagoon, Splatter Disco, none of that coming out on January 12th.
That's it.
Oh, Necroville. Co-directed by yourself and Billy Garbarina. Looking back now from when you started feature filmmaking to where you are now, I mean, you mentioned feeding the masses of sending out a press release and getting a tremendous response. Discussing micro-budget filmmaking on the podcast has been very in-your-face reality. I don't sugarcoat anything, and I've been sort of, you know, talking about a 2012 end of days situation with micro budget filmmaking that is very, very difficult. And it's very difficult to find distribution that's going to lead to any decent amount of to recoup a budget, let's say. Do you see a difference between when you started and now? I mean, is there a noticeable trend difference regarding interest or monies?
Well, the funny thing is that basically when we started making films, because of our inexperience, they cost more to make. We were spending a lot more money and I think getting less. And now we are spending less and getting more.
Okay.
And our budgets have decreased, but I think the quality has increased only because we're learning. Our last film, None of That, cost very little to make, but theatrically, just in limited theatrical showings, did very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where yes, the market has gotten tougher. No question about it. I mean, right now, the industry is looking for a new business model. Figure it'll be tough for a while as we transition, but I think we will eventually get there.
What I really like about you guys is you seem to have a definite energy behind you. And when I say that, I mean, you mentioned theatrical. It seems to me you have what I call a happening. You have a happening going on, which is you have your film group.
Involved, so I don't know if it can be called a classic sense.
You're in Rhode Island, correct?
Yes.
I mean, you're in Rhode Island. You seem to have a stock group now of actors and, I guess, folks working on your films. You mentioned theatrical, which, you know, maybe a little bit you could explain this, because a lot of indie filmmakers are not achieving what you guys are doing. I've personally rarely met filmmakers who have been successful producing films, micro-budget films, and getting them theatrical, and on top of that, making money. So.
Well, I mean, I feel like the theatrical thing has more to do with a willingness to you know, put it out there on the line and see what happens. Because honestly, I mean, we were pretty. I mean, you know. With some exceptions. We were pretty much the first people in our geographic area who, you know, went to a local theater and said, hey, you know, can we rent out your theater for an evening and we'll give you X amount up front. And, you know, we've done okay by that. But ever since we started doing that, in the last couple of years, a film community has kind of grown up in Rhode Island and more people are doing that. And in the past, I think there was a film community that made films and then sat on them.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of the success has to do with the fact that Richard has, you know, a really good technical background. So all of our films are have a really good technical proficiency. But a lot of it has to do with chutzpah to say, listen, you know, we've got a finished film. I think it can go into a theater and make some money. Well, it's showmanship.
Yes.
It's going back to the old style, you know, exploitation, you know, and I think people still want to go to a theater and watch something that's, you know, maybe a little racy, you know, a little shocking. And I think we, you know, promote these events very well. And I think we, you know, get a good turnout. And it's amazing, you know, how fast you can get a return on your investment through theatrical showings if you publicize them well.
That's why I'm saying it's a happening. You guys are putting the energy and belief behind it, and you're seeing results because of it. Now, maybe there's a few factors involved. As you said, geographically speaking, maybe this would not have worked if you were, let's say, in New York City or Los Angeles, because it's...
Oh, God. New York City, I mean, we lived in the New York area for a little bit more than a year, a few years back, just having to do with my day job. And the place was impossible to make films in.
Right.
The reason being, you know, if you go into a laundromat in New York City and you say, hey, you know, we'd like to shoot here sometime, maybe after you're closed, they'll say, oh, yeah, we had a film here like 2 weeks ago. Here's our rate sheet. You know, here, you know, it'll be $1,000 a day, give or take, you know. And so, you know, you can take it or leave it. Rhode Island, if you go into a nightclub and you say, hey, you know, we'd like to shoot here sometime when you're not open, they'll be like,
well, you know, why don't we shut down Friday night and you can come on in? It would be so awesome to have a film shot here, you know? And similarly, like, independent theaters in New York, because square foot of space rents for $100 a day.
Right.
You know, a theater has to have gigantic overhead to you know, make the ends meet. Whereas in Rhode Island, you know, we've still got a few theaters that are willing to take a chance on things.
Right.
You know, we'll see how it plays outside of Rhode Island. I know it's playing in Canada on January 9th and 11th at the Mayfair Theater in Ottawa.
This is which film? Which film?
None of that.
None of that, correct. Okay. So any fans in Ottawa can go...
We'll find out.
Well, this...
I think Richard has a Facebook stalker from that area. I don't know about anyone else.
Well, this podcast, this interview will premiere on January 1st on our site and on iTunes. So fans that are in Canada...
Start the year, you know?
Can attend. And what is that date again?
That is January 9th and 11th at the Mayfair Theater in Ottawa. And I know that the Mayfair Theater has a website... And what it is, I don't remember, but I'm sure everyone can look up the Mayfair Theater in Ottawa on Google. And there's a calendar up there that will have the show times.
Right. And there's some other events. January 12th are two release dates for you. One for your own release of Pretty Dead Things. And our release here in this studio, Camp Motion Pictures, for None of That, correct?
Yes, very excited.
And then the event, let me ask you, the event you're having, is it on the 15th? Is that a public event or just a private invite event?
That's a public event.
So you have also a public event. Is that the 15th?
Yes, that's January 15th at Club Gallery in Providence, Rhode Island, at starting at 9:15. 9:30 p.m., and it's a DVD release party to celebrate the release of None of That and Breathe In Things.
So this is a real good opportunity for fans who are in the Rhode Island area to really show up, and, I mean, they would pretty much meet you guys and much of your cast and much of your crew.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're all a bunch of lushes who will show up to a bar for a party. So
exactly.
Right, I'm even threatening...
For unwanted sexual advances from my cast and crew, so...
Right, and I'm threatening to make an appearance as well.
That would be awesome, Mike.
Yeah, and this, I mean, folks out there listening, this is a live event at a club. It's not a screening, it's just a party, right?
No, it's just a party, yep.
Even better. It's a party celebrating Scorpio releasing and their two newest films and a way to really go... And meet everyone to see what's happening. I have to tell you that I'm really excited about what's going on from every single angle, including the fact that you have two releases on the 12th, one through Camp Motion Pictures, which is nothing more than a subsidiary of other labels that have used, like Shockarama, you know, all run by the same group here under our roof. But simultaneously, you're doing a release by yourself, which I think is fantastic because as a filmmaking group, it's going to give you an opportunity to really see what's going on out there in the business and to weigh the differences to figure out your next step of maybe what's better for you guys, correct?
I mean, there is some of that. The interesting thing is that the more, like, we put out Beyond the Dunwich Horror ourselves, and it's been a really... interesting kind of eye-opening experience,
right?
To just learn how this all works. You know, we're not dealing with the giant physical distribution entities like Ryko or the like, but you know, there are things like, who knew that you had to get a barcode?
Oh, okay.
How do you get a barcode? Well, apparently there's this thing called the Universal Code Council, and you go there and you buy a barcode. Like. It's kind of mind-blowing to be like, who knew that this was necessary for commerce in this day and age, you know?
You're going through what every filmmaker that's listening to this podcast wants to know, because every filmmaker wants to get their film released And you guys are doing it, and that's very exciting. And you're sounds like you're kind of not only using traditional distribution with companies, but exploring it yourself. And I think that's to be applauded, because I think it's very important. Because anyone that's ever distributed through any of the companies here, I've always encouraged filmmakers that are prolific to explore other avenues, because you really need that, I think, understanding of how different avenues work. And that's what I'm saying. You guys, I think, when it's all said and done, let's say a year or two from now, you'll have a whole different perspective of what works and how it works.
I mean, it's always a learning process.
Right.
So, for example, you know, we for the longest time were, you know, just selling it on our website. That was doing okay, and then we're like, well, I wonder what it would take to get it onto Amazon.
Right.
So you spend like a good couple of days like reading Amazon's endless list of websites of how you do this and how you do that. And you decide, okay, well, are we going to go with the on-demand printing, blah, 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 where they hold on to a thing, or are we going to handle shipping ourselves? And it's pretty fascinating.
Yes.
Actually. I think the next hurdle is going to be where we go, okay, how do we get this on Netflix? Is that a worthwhile business decision?
Right.
I think the one thing we're finding out about movies, especially when you distribute it yourself, is that get that old saying that when you think the bag of flour is empty, you can always tap the bag a little bit and some more comes out. You know, there's always these new little venues that you can get, you know, money from, whether it be Netflix or Amazon or theatrical showings. And I think so many times people make a movie, they give it one shot, and then that's it. And the film is put on a shelf. You know, the movie is your biggest asset that you have, and you need to kind of shake the bag of flour as much as humanly possible.
Right. I think that you guys have a tremendously positive attitude towards everything. I think that's half the battle. I really do. Attitude.
Yeah, well, you know, some some weeks are good weeks, and some weeks are bad weeks, you know? And on the good weeks, yeah, it's great that, you know, you have a positive attitude. And on the bad weeks, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, God, I never want to make another film again. It's the end. It's the end. Never again. I wash my hands of this whole thing. You just try to make sure that the good weeks outnumber the bad.
Right. I mean, I think you guys, knowing you for a few years now, I just think you have a good grip on it, and you're handling it really well, because you're right. I mean, there are certainly bad weeks, but you guys, whatever's going on behind the scenes, you always lend a positive spin to it, and I think that's A1 important. I don't know if I'm correct in saying, but perhaps maybe filmmakers and maybe even some actors maybe you're expecting too much, or expecting, I mean, you guys seem to be rolling with what's going on with the business and distributing yourself, and you seem very open to, I hate to say it, but even open to failure, picking yourself up very quickly and just moving on, as you said, to find new avenues of exploration of, hey, let's do this theatrical, or, hey, what about Netflix? It really seems you're keeping the ball rolling as opposed to stopping and brooding about anything.
I have a screwy imagination, and I know I just kind of know it's like I'm never going to work in Hollywood. I'm not going to be making the you know, the 20, 30, 40, $50 million pictures, and I enjoy the level I'm working at right now because it gives me the creative freedom to do what I want. You know, the fact that I just made a film about vigilante nuns, and there's a big song and dance sequence with Jesus and like 50 nuns. If that was a mainstream movie, they'd be like, no way, man. There's no way you're going to do this.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And to me, it's like I get great pleasure out of the fact that I get to do this kind of material. And to me, it's like I have no reason to complain.
Right.
You know, I am surrounded by a great group of people, and, you know, we do the best work we can. And, you know, we have a nice fan base. And, you know, what the hell do I have to complain about?
I love it. I want to thank you guys for being on the podcast, and hopefully we could, you know, check in with you guys maybe later in the year. Really, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Mike.
Great.
Thank you.
We taped that earlier today, and I'm so thrilled that there's a group of filmmakers mm-hmm. who sort of, I said a happening, have it going on. Maybe they can't see it from their perspective, but from personal experience, when you have that flow.
It's great.
You're doing one production after another because the flow is there and the talent is there and right. you know the writing is fluid and they're doing theatrical screenings, they're very prolific. Their products are out on DVD. And I said to Richard and Ted, what you're doing is a great thing because you don't see it now, but the perspective you'll have is you'll come out of this knowing a lot more because you'll see how different companies handle your movies, mm-hmm. like. Your own, because so many filmmakers ask about self-distribution, knocking on video stores' doors and trying to get products in, and they'll have that experience under their belt of distributing their own title and comparing that information with, you know, more traditional distributor like Chakrama Cinema. So, bravo to you guys.
Yeah.
And I do want to tell you that None of That, which is a non-sploitation film.
None.
None.
N-U-N.
None of that. N-U-N.
Okay.
None of that.
None, ho.
I would like to say that none of that.
Ho, none. It's an old Mike Myers bit.
Yeah. It comes out on DVD. It's out on DVD January 12th. And at alternativecinema.com, it's a $24.99 DVD that is on sale for $14.99.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Free shipping on AC.com.
Whoa.
In the U.S. And also, the entire Richard Griffin library of films are now on sale for this month only, January 2010, for $9.99.
How many movies does Richard have?
Creature from the Hillbilly Lagoon, Feeding the Masses, Necroville, he co-directed. Splatter Disco.
And Sprocket Hall.
Oh, right. He's got six or seven.
Yeah, yeah. So Splatter Disco stars Ken Foray. Oh. He is the African-American actor from the original Dawn of the Dead. Everyone should know, on January 9th and 11th at the Mayfair Theater, that's 1074 Bank Street in Ottawa, Canada.
Ottawa, Canada.
Mayfair Theater, 9th and 11th of this month.
Ottawa, Canada.
They're screening None of That.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic. Mayfairtheatre.ca. Mayfair Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
Ah, the oldie way.
Yeah. Ottawa, Canada. The oldie. Mayfairtheatre.ca. Check it out.
Ottawa's a beautiful city.
Yep. Ottawa, Canada. Ottawa, Canada. Ottawa, Canada. Ottawa, Canada. Ottawa, Canada. Ottawa, Canada. And on the 15th of January, Richard is having a party in Rhode Island. I may drive to. Maybe you want to go.
Let's go. I know Rhode Island really well.
He's having like a wild party in a bar to celebrate the release of his films.
What city? Providence?
Yes.
I know Providence so well.
Yes. So it's on the 15th. And go. I don't have the details in front of me. Go to Facebook.com and look up Richard Griffin or Scorpio Film Releasing or on MySpace and get the details.
Spent a lot of time at Lupo's.
Oh, yeah?
Lupo's is like a big rock club in downtown Providence.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Dude. Also this month, we are celebrating the release of Carter Stevens' The Collegiates Collection. That is an after-hour cinema release of classic New York adult cinema.
Is it grindhouse or like porn?
No, it's porn grind.
Oh.
That has a suggested retail price of $39.99 and is available on alternativecinema.com for 1 month only. For $29.99.
Oh, much better. Much better.
God, Mike, how do you do it?
Free shipping in the continental USA.
Oh, come on, Mike.
Are you kidding me?
And also, Punk Rock and Pleasure Palace double feature, which, we talked about that for months.
Yes, we did.
Punk Rock!
Yeah.
New from Carter Steven. Punk Rock. Punk Rock explores the seamy underside of the New York rock scene. Join Carter Stevens as he takes you on a sexual odyssey in the underground world of punk rock.
It's on sale for $9.99.
Oh, that's ridiculous. A deal.
Mike, yeah. Come on.
Punk rock.
You're giving... How can you do that?
Mike, no.
Punk rock.
No.
I saw 30 Seconds to Mars at Lupo's. You know, the Jared Leto band?
Oh, yeah.
They were pretty good.
Is that all right? They got a new record out, I think.
Yeah, they do.
And that's it. We're done.
Okay.
That's it for January.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
That's a wonderful thing.
Listen, I want to thank everyone for listening. Really, I'm excited in the coming months to talk about, you know, some
ding, ding, ding.
Some some more
punk rock. Punk rock.
We want to thank everybody for writing in.
Yeah,
are always welcome.
And that is alternativecinemapodcast@gmail.com. Yep. And we'll see you next month. And I'll tell you next month all about my exploits in New York City, getting a 1989 feature film shot on Kodachrome Super 8.
Super 8.
Telecined to digital video. And when it's going to be released. Looks great.
Looks great.
Wow. All right, see you guys.
The little clocks stop ticking now. We're swallowed in the stomach room. The only sound to tear the night comes from the man upstairs. His bloated, belching figure stops. He may crash through the ceiling soon. The window sees trees cry from cold and claw the moon. But we know, don't we? And we'll dream, won't we? Of Montague Terrace in blue. The girl across the hall makes love. Her thoughts lay cold like shattered stone. Her thighs are full of tales to tell of all the nights she's known. Your eyes ignite like cold blue fire. The scent of secrets everywhere. A fist filled with illusions clutches all our cares. But we know, don't we? And we'll dream, won't we? Of Montague Terrace in blue. All in blue.